This is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
The war on terrorism, will it be fought overseas or will it affect us here at home? If you are like most folks, you want to be prepared, but can't afford an underground shelter. So what do you do? Did you know that you can use your home as a shelter against fallout and biological or chemical attacks? With a little know-how, it's not that difficult. Sheltering in place, surviving acts of terrorism from biological, chemical, and radioactive fallout, developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable disease.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're looking for. Oh, you're listening to, they happen to be my views, and for the next hour they're going to be the views of Bobber Low Fisher from the Vaccine Information Center back in Washington, D.C., actually in Virginia, but certainly they operate in Washington, D.C. The Vaccine Information Center is the National Vaccine Information Center is trying to get information out on vaccines. Are they safe and are they effective? Well, this afternoon, of course, we're going to be talking about the influenza vaccine, the so-called swine flu vaccine, or the type A H1N1 influenza that they tell us is going to come back, and it could, it might, it even possibly could kill hundreds of thousands of Americans this year if you're not vaccinated. And, of course, they have a vaccine. It's untried. It's unproven. We don't know that it works. We don't know that it's dangerous. But we're going to give it to millions of people. In fact, the government's already ordered and has in its possession at least pretty close to 50 million, or some of the manufacturers actually have 50 million doses of a vaccine that's unproven. We don't know whether it's safe. We don't know whether it works, but we're going to give it to the American people anyway. Barbara, what in heaven's name is going on? This just doesn't make any sense.
Well, you know, what people really need to know is that right now, even according to the Centers for Disease Control, this influenza virus they're calling swine flu, H1N1, swine flu, has symptoms that are no more serious than the regular influenza that comes around every year. You know, coughing, low-grade fever, fatigue, body aches, chills, and sometimes you have some vomiting and diarrhea, but mostly it's just, you know, respiratory, coughing, et cetera. It is caused in this country, they say, about 43,000 cases that have been lab confirmed of swine flu and about 350 deaths. In the world, about 138,000 cases have been confirmed and about 800 deaths. But this is not anywhere near a serious lethal pandemic influenza at this point. At a meeting at the Food and Drug Administration on July 23rd, the CDC said this virus right now is stable. It is not mutated. It does not show any signs of mutating. And if everything stays the same, come fall, we'll still have a moderate to mild swine flu influenza. So, you know, this sort of declaration of a public health emergency, which has now allowed vaccine manufacturers under special legislation that's been passed since 9/11 to fast track these experimental swine flu vaccines to bring them out this fall and vaccinate kids in the schools, I feel is a little bit of an overreaction. I think it's fine to produce the vaccines, but to already be planning a school-based vaccine program it seems questionable to me.
But of course, what they tell us is that the virus might mutate, and if it should mutate, it might mutate into a deadly form. And if it became a deadly form, as many as 300,000 or 400,000 Americans might die. But if it does mutate, then why would we expect that this vaccine we produce for the very mild form would be good for the deadly form? And what are the chances it's suddenly going to mutate? I mean, this seems almost as if they have another agenda. Are they want to make a lot of money for the drug companies? Is there something in their vaccine? Have you any thoughts as to what is really going on? And hold that thought. We're going to bring some other stations back on board. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Barbara Lofisher of the National Vaccine Information Center. And Barbara's on the front lines of this battle as far as vaccines are concerned. Are they safe and effective? Certainly, what about this new swine flu? They call it the type A H1N1 virus, or the so-called swine flu, or the Mexican flu. Well, the pig owners don't like it called the swine flu. The Mexicans don't like it called the Mexican flu, so they call it a type A H1N1 virus, which is really a very mild virus worldwide. It's actually killed less than 800 people throughout the entire world, about 300 here in the United States. They tell us over 1 million people have contracted the disease, but of course they really don't know. It's all conjecture. But they have these massive campaigns all planned. They're going to take a vaccine. They're going to test it maybe for a month. They won't know whether it's really going to be effective. They certainly aren't going to know whether it's going to be safe. They tell us that there's going to be thimerosal and lots of this mercury compound for which there is no safe level. And then, of course, we do not know, of course, what's going to happen long term as far as the effects of this vaccine are concerned. So, Barbara, why in heaven's name are they doing something that is totally illogical?
Well, I think that part of what's happening here is that the manufacturers for many years have wanted to get oil and water-based adjuvants, squalene-like adjuvants, added to vaccines, because those oil and water adjuvants ramp up the immune system, make the immune system really have a strong response to the antigen in the vaccines, and what they can do is they can use less antigen. So they get a higher yield when they make the vaccine. They put these adjuvants in that really cause this incredible inflammatory response by the body, so the antibodies are produced. And these oil and water adjuvants have been controversial. They've never been licensed by the FDA, despite the fact that the manufacturers have wanted the FDA to license them. Under this special declaration of a public health emergency as of April 26th, the legislation that has been passed at the federal level since September 11th, 2001, that is supposed to be used whenever there's a public health emergency, has now gone into effect. And it allows under an emergency use authorization, an EUA, the manufacturers to fast-track these experimental swine flu vaccines and potentially to add these unlicensed adjuvants, these oil and water adjuvants, into the vaccine, and that will allow them to make more vaccine, and they say it will make the vaccine more effective. Well, the National Vaccine Information...
Hold that thought for just a moment, Barbara. We'll be right back here.
Okay.
Well, Dr. Stan, and certainly Barbara is pointing out that there is legislation now that, of course, the World Health Organization has declared the swine flu a pandemic. Now, suddenly that changes everything. Everything operates under different federal laws. And even though squalene, which is an oil adjuvant, an adjuvant is something you add to the vaccines to make them really much more effective, and they are much more effective. The trouble, the reason it's never been... suddenly authorized is because there's a great deal of question that this is producing an autoimmune disease, and certainly we see autoimmune skyrocketing, and certainly many people think this is why we had so many people's lives lost during the Gulf War, because of the addition of squalene to the vaccines, the experimental vaccines that were given to our troops during the first Gulf War. Of course, the government denies that they would do that. Oh, they would never do anything like that, experiment on the American troops. But, of course, this squalene has never been approved by the FDA, and yet, Barbara, do we know whether it's going to be added to the new vaccines, or at least added by some of the manufacturers? We've heard rumors, but do we have any real knowledge what's in these vaccines?
Well, we know that the initial doses of vaccine, about 50 to 60 million doses, that are going to be on the available probably in September, most likely will contain just the H1N1 antigen, won't contain any adjuvants. However, they could then in September say, okay, we need more vaccine, and we're going to put these adjuvants in. The government has already purchased 118 million doses of these oil and water squalene type adjuvants. So they've already purchased them. They've also contracted with the manufacturers, both manufacturers that are going to have inactivated, injected vaccines, as well as MedImmune, which is going to produce a live virus nasal spray vaccine. They've contracted for about a total of 190 million doses of H1N1 swine flu vaccine. They gave the manufacturers in April $1 billion of taxpayer money to produce these new H1N1 swine flu vaccines. So they've got the contracts. We know they're going to bring these vaccines out. What we don't know is, are they going to invoke the emergency use authorization and allow the manufacturers of the inactivated injected vaccine, the shot form that you know when you get the shot in the arm, are they going to allow them to put these adjuvants in there that could potentially cause autoimmunity, particularly in people who already have a predisposition to allergy or autoimmunity? We just don't know what they're going to do.
But, of course, if we don't know what they're going to do, and they don't know what the long-term effect on it, they're only going to have maybe at the most 6 or 8 weeks to see what happens when they do start actually giving it to people. Vaccines could have effects that would come on many years or many months or many years later. I mean, why are they going to give any totally experimental, untried, unproven a vaccine to literally millions of American citizens? That just doesn't make sense for a non-existent threat.
Well, I know it's a very strange situation, in my view. I mean, when I went to the FDA meeting, I'm sitting there thinking, why is everybody so gung-ho? And I thought, one thing I think that's happened is the Department of Homeland Security, which was created under the Homeland Security Act in 2002 as a response to bioterrorism. Everyone was very afraid after 9/11 that terrorists had weaponized microorganisms like smallpox and anthrax. And that's why a lot of the legislation like Homeland Security, the Project BioShield legislation that was created in response to the fear of bioterrorist attacks. But what happened in that legislation was the public health officials and vaccine manufacturers got in there. Their lobbyists convinced the politicians to add natural disease outbreaks into that bioterrorism legislation. Well, of course, influenza is a natural disease outbreak. You now have the Department of Homeland Security, which is the third largest department in the federal government now. Well, a lot of people, more than 200,000 people in that department, all dedicated to trying to prevent a terrorist attack or trying to protect Homeland Security. Well, there's not any terrorist attacks. I mean, we don't have bioterrorist attacks. So we've got a natural disease outbreak, influenza, and they've been doing pandemic flu planning for many, many years, for about 3 or 4 decades, and I think this is like a, for them, it's like a drill. It's like they want to go through this drill, and of course it's an excuse for the manufacturers to lobby the government to fast-track these unapproved adjuvants. So I think what's happening is you're marrying up government power with the corporations who want to make a profit off of what the government has declared as a public health emergency. And I think people have put the blinders on over the years And they have said, you know what, these vaccines are safe. Whenever something bad happens after vaccination, it's just a coincidence. We've got to control all these infectious diseases with the mass use of multiple vaccines, and we're just going to go ahead and keep on adding more and more vaccines without really doing the scientific studies that prove that they're safe. And I think these people are suffering from a lack of rigorous scientific proof of safety and efficacy. And I think that's because the companies have too much influence at the FDA and the CDC. These elected officials in Congress have allowed these companies to have too much influence.
I think what we ought to do is just demand that all the congressmen and all of their children and all of their grandchildren take the vaccines before they try to force them on the American people. Now, one of the things that we hear a lot about is, well, what about mandatory vaccination? Are they going to simply say, you have to take this, or children have to take the vaccine to get into school? And, of course, a lot of parents are saying, I don't want my child to take an experimental vaccine, because we know some of the disasters that have occurred with the use of experimental vaccines in the past. And certainly Baxter recently, as you well know, had actually produced an influenza vaccine, not this vaccine, but another vaccine, that happened just by chance to contain a live, deadly avian flu virus, influenza virus. This kills birds, and of course it can kill people if it gets into them, but it's not readily transmissible. And yet they put that into the influenza virus they were going to give to millions of people in Europe. And if the Czechoslovakian government hadn't put the vaccine into ferrets and the ferrets had died, they possibly could have killed hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people in Europe with that vaccine. Why would anybody want to trust a vaccine, especially when this one has no track record?
Well, I don't know why the people aren't demanding more study, because you're right. The swine flu vaccines are only going to be studied for about 3 weeks in a couple of hundred healthy adults and children, and yet it's going to be given to everybody, including pregnant women. And if you even look at influenza studies, just regular influenza vaccine that they're giving to pregnant women, you see how shockingly small those clinical studies are in pregnant women to prove that it's safe to give a pregnant woman a vaccine.
Are there any studies at all that show it's entirely safe to give a pregnant woman a vaccine that contains thimerosal, a mercury product?
I have been searching for the studies in pregnant women, influenza vaccine in pregnant women. I've come up with a couple of studies in a couple of hundred women, and that's just not a big, and they're only followed up for a couple of years. It's just not enough study on enough women to say that it's okay to give every pregnant woman influenza vaccine. And what I'm concerned about this year is that there's two doses of the swine flu vaccine that they're going to be giving children and pregnant women and people under 30 years of age who they say are at highest risk for having complications from swine flu. And those two doses will be given 3 to 4 weeks apart. They're also saying give the regular influenza shot, which means that children are going to be getting 3 influenza shots this year, 2 swine flu and 1 regular. There's not any time to study whether that's safe.
Well, what about the mercury in them? Will there be thimerosal mercury in these vaccines?
There will be thimerosal in the inactivated injected vaccines that are in multi-dose vials. There are going to be a limited supply of injected vaccines that are in single-dose vials that have trace amounts of mercury. There is one manufacturer out of Australia, CSL, that is going to make an inactivated, totally mercury-free vaccine. Now, those injected vaccines are the ones that have the mercury in it, you know, with the multi-dose vials. Those are the vaccines they are talking about putting the adjuvant in, these unlicensed adjuvants. So that means those vaccines could potentially contain not only mercury, but an unlicensed oil and water adjuvant. Both of those together? I mean, It's not been studied.
Well, of course, but that is the insanity of what's going on. But even more than that, I think many people are concerned are they going to make it mandatory to have children vaccinated before going to school? What happens if people say, I don't want my child vaccinated, and I'm not going to take the vaccine myself? And what's going to happen to the healthcare workers who say, I don't want to take an experimental vaccine?
Well, the healthcare workers are going to be targeted for the swine flu vaccine, no question. I don't know what they're going to say, because it will probably be made a condition of employment. The thing is that since September 11, 2001, the public health laws in this country have been rewritten at the state level and the federal level, but the states are the ones that are going to implement. If they say, right now, the swine flu vaccine campaign is supposed to be voluntary. That's what the Secretary of Health says right now. What we're concerned about is that most of the time, vaccines that are recommended for universal use start out voluntary and then become mandatory. The public health laws in place right now do allow the state to use the militia, the police powers, to come in to your home without announcement, investigate, potentially quarantine you, and require vaccination. Now, whether or not they'll go that far, we just don't know. But people need to be informed about their public health laws that govern a public health emergency.
And people have to realize this is an experimental vaccine. They will have no long-term studies. We may trigger off the greatest epidemic of autoimmune disease in all history. And where is the outcry in the media? Well, Barbara, you know, I think an awful lot of people, at least those I talk to, are concerned. But what about the general population? Do you think that the general population that doesn't listen to alternative radio has any idea of the real danger that is inherent in, number one, thimerosal, number two, the squalene and other unlicensed and unapproved oil adjuvants, which have created a tremendous autoimmune response? And we already have this epidemic of autoimmune disease in America. You pointed out that one in nine children, American children, has asthma. We don't see this in children who don't take the vaccines, like the Amish children, and we don't see the autism or other neurodevelopmental maladies in the children, the Amish children, who do not take the the regular childhood vaccines. Has this been ever brought up at the national meetings that you've attended?
Well, only by people like me, and, you know, and they only usually have one consumer on these vaccine advisory committees. I served for 4 years on the FDA committee and was the only one usually that brought up these safety concerns. And the point that you just made, which is that we have an awful lot of children who are chronically ill and disabled today. It seems as if when we give more and more vaccines, and we've tripled the numbers of doses of vaccines, we give our children under age six in the last 25 years, and we've seen this doubling and tripling of the numbers of children who are chronically ill and disabled. One in six child in America is now learning disabled. One in 100 to 150 becomes autistic. One in nine, as you pointed out, develops asthma. One in 450 develops diabetes. We have an epidemic of chronic disease and disability. As we vaccinate more and more, we should be getting healthier. If the vaccines make our children healthy and have long-term health, why are so many of them so sick? And I think that's the question that people are starting to ask. But I do think that the majority of Americans really don't know enough about vaccine risks. They assume that vaccines are safe because the government's told them they're safe, their doctors told them they're safe. And only when a parent has a child who then has a severe reaction, then becomes disabled or chronically sick, do they finally ask that question? Oh, my goodness, they go back in the medical records and they look and they see that the child developed the disability or developed the illness after a round of vaccinations. It's only when it happens to you, and that's what happened to me back in 1980 when I didn't know vaccines could do these things. I totally trusted blindly my pediatrician when I took my baby in. I didn't know, and it was only after my son became, I witnessed a vaccine reaction, a severe vaccine reaction, and my son regressed. physically, mentally, and emotionally, and became multiply learning disabled, attention deficit disorder, couldn't go into a regular classroom in the school system, had to be in special education, his whole public education. It was only when it happened to me that I finally woke up and started to do the research and was astonished at what I found in the medical literature that had never been told to mothers, never been told to the parents, about what vaccines can do when they go wrong. And I was shocked that we mandate the use of these vaccines, and yet we don't really require high standards for proof of safety and efficacy. We should not be mandating products like this.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Barbara was talking about, really, of course, this idea that vaccines are safe and effective. Well, most vaccines, at least the childhood vaccines, are effective. I mean, we don't see the outbreaks, massive outbreaks of measles or mumps or chickenpox anymore. But the question is, are the vaccines safe? And I think we have to separate efficacy or whether they work from are they safe? And, of course, as Barbara's pointed out, why, of course, certainly one in every six children has a learning or neurodevelopmental abnormality. Certainly one in every nine children has asthma. And you don't see this in the Amish children who don't take the vaccines. Certainly between 1 in 50, 1 in 100 children are autistic today. Certainly a 1 in, what, 450 children have juvenile diabetes. We do not see, and we did not see before the vaccines. And, of course, we see a tremendous number of people with allergies and even adults developing adult asthma who never had it before after receiving a number of vaccinations within the military. We see an epidemic of autoimmune disease, and very often people tie this to the squalene that it was in the experimental vaccines given to our troops during the Gulf War. And now they want to give this to our entire population. And I share your concern, Barbara. How are we going to get the information out now? I know you're putting on a conference on the 2nd of October. Would you like to just put a plug for your conference?
I would, because it's the biggest conference on vaccine safety that's been held in 7 years. It's the 4th International Public Conference on Vaccination. National Vaccine Information Center is sponsoring it October 2 through 4 this fall, 2009. At the Hyatt Regency Hotel in Reston, Virginia, right outside of Washington, D.C., near Dulles International Airport. We're bringing 35 speakers, top speakers from around the world, to talk about the science, policy, ethics, and law of vaccination. And we're going to be doing advocacy training in the evening, how to become a vaccine safety advocate in your state, how to fight for your right to make informed, voluntary health care choices, protect your right under the law, exemptions under the law in your state, which are under attack. And I think that it's a place for families to come and health care professionals to come who want to really see a change in vaccine policy in this country, to come and learn how to be part of making that change.
And, of course, I'm going to be going there. I think it's an important conference. Dr. David Ayoub is going to be there, who's been a speaker at our meetings. And David does a wonderful job. He talks about the CDC studies that show that thimerosal is safe, and the ones that they quote. And one of the leading ones was a group of people with meningococcal encephalitis, and they gave the thimerosal to them, and every one of them died. But they say, but, of course, they didn't die of thimerosal. So this is entirely safe. Now, have you ever heard of that study?
You mean the one that Eli Lilly
I don't know who did it, but, I mean, everybody who got the thimerosal died, but they said, well, it's safe because they didn't die of the thimerosal.
Yeah, this is an amazing historical fact that the only study that was done on thimerosal, this mercury preservative that they'd used in vaccines and killed bacterial vaccines for years, there was only a study that Eli Lilly did, who was the manufacturer of thimerosal, way back in, I think it was the 1920s, and they did it on people who were dying from meningitis. They injected thimerosal into people who were dying from meningitis, and all the people died, and they said, well, they didn't die from the thimerosal we put into them, they died from the meningitis. Well, how did they know? How did they know those people would have survived?
I mean, that is the most incredible study. Of course, I don't know what Dr. David Abe is going to be talking about, but I hope he brings that up in his talk, because I think it's so vitally important. People to understand there is not one study that they have that shows that thimerosal is safe. Thimerosal is mercurochrome methylate. It's too toxic to put on the skin. The FDA has outlawed, you know, the use of methylate and mercurochrome because it's too toxic to put on the skin, but it's all right to inject into our children in multiple doses, in multiple vaccines, and of course they're going to be getting phenomenal doses, you know, not only unborn children, giving it to the pregnant women, but then giving it to children who are 6 months of age, the swine flu vaccine, and then two doses of that, and then of course a regular thimerosal in the regular vaccine they want people to get for influenza. That'll be three shots for a six-month-old. This has got to be madness, Barbara.
Well, it's just an assumption of safety. It's just sort of blindly going forward and saying we must prevent influenza, when influenza has never been, for most people who are healthy, that big of a problem. We've all had the flu. We get it. We get permanent immunity to the strain that we get. When that strain comes around again, or a relative of it, we've got antibodies and we can fight it. I mean, why they are trying to prevent everyone from getting this swine flu when it's a moderate to mild influenza so that they can't get permanent antibodies is I just don't understand it.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that later. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Of course, our guest is Barbara Lowe Fisher from the National Vaccine Information Center. We're talking about the swine flu vaccine. And, of course, we hope and pray that they're not going to try to mandate this. And if they do, I would encourage people, and I don't like to encourage civil disobedience, but if there was ever an instance where people had to protect their families and their children and their grandchildren, it would be now, telling them not to take the vaccine. What would you suggest people do, Barbara?
Well, between now and the fall, I really think it's important for families to meet and discuss what they're going to do if there is a quarantine that's put into effect at the state or the community level. We don't know what they're going to do, and I think people need to understand the laws in their states. You can go onto our website at www.mbic.org. We have a lot of information that you can go and do your own research on the laws in your state, and learn whether or not you've got really oppressive laws, because after all, you know, if the police powers are used, we all need to know what options we have. I think you can contact your elected officials at the state level and say, you know what, I want to have the right to have informed consent, to consent to whether or not I want myself or my child vaccinated with swine flu vaccine. And if you're going to have quarantine, I want to be able to home quarantine. I want to be quarantined in my home. I don't want to be taken out of my home and put somewhere else. There are quarantine centers that are being created at the national airports, because there's been some talk about whether or not they're going to divert planes that are coming into the country, into these airports to screen all passengers for swine flu. I can't imagine that they're going to do that unless this gets to be a really nasty influenza, because this is going to disrupt commerce and cause tremendous problems for air transportation. But that's how far they're going with this. And so people need to be prepared. They need to let their legislators know that they don't want these draconian measures taken unless it's an absolute total emergency. You know, I saw recently that in China they've had three cases of pneumonic plague. Pneumonic plague is something...
Hold that thought. Hold that thought right for just for a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Barbara is talking about, you know, we don't know what they're going to do. Are they going to mandate draconian conditions? Everybody's going to have to be vaccinated. We're going to send the police out and force people to be vaccinated or taken to special centers. Apparently, there are planning quarantine centers in many of the larger airports, with the thought that they're going to quarantine planes coming into the United States because of this dreaded swine flu, which is really no worse, probably even milder in many respects than the regular flu. But of course they keep saying, well, it might mutate, that's why we've got to do this. But if it mutates, then all these vaccines, these hundreds of millions of doses of the vaccine, won't necessarily protect you because you're dealing with a mutated virus. So why is this going on? It doesn't make sense. Well, Barbara was just talking about what's going on in China. Do you want to pick up on that thought?
Well, there were three cases of pneumonic plague. This is a very serious, disease, I mean infection, where you can die within 24 hours.
This is the old black plague, of course.
Yeah, it attacks the lungs. Now, that if you had something like that going around, of course you would want to have really strict quarantine measures and this sort of like national emergency. But I think it's a mistake for the government to declare a national public health emergency when it's not really an emergency, when the infection that's going around is not in the category of an Ebola or a pneumonic plague. I mean, because what's going to happen is people are going to, it's just like the old story about crying wolf. You don't declare a national public health emergency unless it truly is.
Well,
because people just don't believe you next time.
They had a national public health emergency in 1976 when Gerald Ford, based upon the fact that one military recruit had died and three or four had gotten ill with a swine flu at that time, and they carried out a massive vaccine program where they vaccinated over 40 million people. And you want to tell the American people, because you've got a DVD up on your website, mm-hmm. which everybody who is ever is concerned about the propaganda that's coming out now needs to see that DVD. Would you like to tell people, first of all, what happened at that time and then about that DVD? It's a 60-minute segment, about 20 minutes long, with Mike Wallace. At the time when Mike Wallace really did investigative reporting, it's one of the best DVDs I've ever seen. But you tell the story.
Well, in 1976, there were a couple of cases of what they called swine flu. I believe it was in soldiers on a base. And they decided that they were going to declare an emergency, that this was a different kind of novel swine flu. And they quickly manufactured this experimental swine flu vaccine back in 76. And they told everybody in the country they needed to get swine flu vaccine because there was a bad epidemic coming. Well, of course, it never materialized. But what did happen was that a number of people got Guillain-Barré syndrome, paralysis, from the swine flu vaccine.
About 500 of them did, I think.
Yes, I mean, I can't remember the exact number, but I know that there were many hundreds of cases in the courts for a long time because they had, again, they protected the manufacturers from liability, and they said, well, you can sue the government. And, of course, the government was very slow to act. And these people were in the courts for a long, long time trying to get compensation. We just don't know what the side effects of this swine flu vaccine is going to be, particularly, as you point out, if they put in these novel experimental adjuvants. So I think that it's really important to put all of this in perspective. I mean, even if you look at the 1918 Spanish influenza pandemic, which was the most serious pandemic that we've seen in the 20th or 21st centuries, that was 1918. They had about a 2.5% mortality rate. There are about 500,000 Americans who are supposedly died from complications of that influenza at a time when we had no antibiotics to help with the complications of pneumonia, et cetera, which is different today. We do have antibiotics today. But, you know, if you look at some of the other pandemics like 1957 and 1968, I think 57 caused about 68,000 deaths and 1968, about 34,000 deaths. Well, you know that the CDC says every year influenza, regular influenza, is associated with about 36,000 deaths. We've only had 350 deaths. from this swine flu influenza. It doesn't even come close to a serious national emergency.
And of course, I hope everybody will go to www.nvic.org. That's for National Vaccine Information Center.org. And scroll down on the front page to the DVD on the 1976 flu. And actually, you'll see the propaganda campaign they put on to frighten people into taking the vaccine. And you see these healthy people, and they say, well, I'm not going to get a vaccine shot. And then you see the next picture, and they look like they're dead or dying in a hospital bed. And they do this over and over and over again to frighten the people, just like they're trying to frighten the people today with a massive campaign, a propaganda campaign, for a non-existent threat or a threat of very minimal significance. And I think that everybody needs to see that DVD. I'm so glad you have it posted on your website.
Well, and I think that people just need to take a deep breath. They need to become educated about both the influenza virus, type A, type B, regular influenza. They need to understand that only 20% of all flu-like illness, respiratory illness, every year that goes around is actually type A or type B influenza. And that influenza, type A and type B, are the strains that are, they select three strains to put in the annual influenza vaccine. So most of the time, what you get, when you get that cough and that fever and that headache and the chills and, you know, the drippy nose, most of the time that's not influenza. How much of what we see this year is going to be actually swine flu influenza? We don't know. And I think there's nothing wrong with being prepared. I think there's nothing wrong for them to produce vaccines for everyone who wants to use them. But I think it's what becomes questionable is when they make the people so afraid in order to potentially create a market for these vaccines. And when they don't tell the whole truth about what the risks that may be associated with the vaccines. And when they don't tell people that there's a way to naturally control infectious disease, communicable disease, the old-fashioned ways that we've always had historically, like wash your hands frequently, don't come into close contact with people who are sick. I mean, that makes common sense. If you're sick, try to stay home until you're well so you don't, you know, go and cough on somebody else. Cover your mouth when you cough or sneeze. Drink plenty of fluids if you're sick, especially water. That helps you flush out the toxins, helps you recover. Get adequate sleep, both if you're not sick and if you are. You know, eat a healthy diet that's rich in vitamins and minerals, especially foods that contain vitamin C, citrus fruits, vitamin D. Spend some time out in the sun to store up on vitamin D. Exercise regularly when you're well. Lower your stress. And look at the holistic alternatives for staying well, whether it's chiropractic or homeopathic, naturopathic, acupuncture. There are many holistic healthcare options out there to both help you stay healthy, and if you're sick, help you get through that illness, including influenza. Now, obviously, if you are extremely sick, when you have a high fever, have symptoms that are extremely severe. Whenever you are sick, you need to contact a healthcare professional. You need to find help. But in most cases, flu does not result in terrible complications and death. Most people who have a bad course of influenza, just like any infectious illness, usually have compromised health, have heart disease, are obese, an autoimmune condition, asthma, and that's what's so ironic here. The same people who are at risk for complications from an infectious disease like influenza are the same people who could potentially go down and have a really hard time with this vaccine. And so, you know, you need to become informed and make an informed choice about which risk you want to take.
Well, I know which one I'm going to take, and I'm not going to take the vaccine under any circumstances. Barbara, before we go on, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with your website, with your organization, with the National Vaccine Information Center.
Yes, you can go on our website at www.nvic.org, National Vaccine Information Center. We're a nonprofit organization. We're a public service organization that is about education and empowerment. Come to our conference October 2 through 4. You won't regret it. Everybody who's ever come to our conference says that the experience changes their life. And, you know, there are many if you need to contact us, you can call us at 703-938-0342. But first go on our website because there's so much free information on there. Sign up for our newsletter, the vaccine e-newsletter. Keeps you up to date on the latest things that are going on.
And be sure to scroll down the page to the site for the 1976 DVD. It's a CBS 60 Minutes and is well worthwhile, 20 minutes. When somebody said it to me, I said, I'm not going to spend 20 minutes watching a DVD. But when you see the government officials being questioned by Mike Wallace, and they're obviously lying, and they're saying, well, we had no idea this was dangerous, and then the other government officials are saying, of course we told them. They knew the dangers of this, and you know, everything was to cover up, was to lie to the American people, was to encourage them to take this dangerous vaccine, and according to Mike Wallace, why 300 people died, my figure was always 25. I don't know how many people died because the government lies, and certainly they got sued because, of course, they got so many people to take the disease, and they got Guillain-Barré disease, which is like a severe polio, a different etiology, but it was directly relatable to the vaccine. And they simply would not, under any circumstances, compensate the people who were foolish enough to believe the government propaganda. And you watch that 60-minute program, and you'll see the methods that they use to frighten the people into taking the vaccine. It really... I think it's so important, as somebody once said, if you don't remember the past, why are you going to
repeat it,
right? And, Chris, that's what's happening today. You need to know what they're doing today, and it's exactly what they did to frighten the people into taking that the swine influenza vaccine in 1976.
No, you're right. Past is prologue. If we don't study the past, we are condemned to repeat it. That's so true. And I found that video to be very compelling as well. I thought it was an amazing history lesson. And if people don't learn from what happened then it's going to be repeated, unfortunately, in the fall.
But, of course, my fear is that what they could do is trigger off an epidemic of autoimmune disease with the squalene, similar to, certainly, what we saw with so many of the veterans of the Gulf War, and there are hundreds of thousands of the 690,000 that went who are still ill, and over 80 of them, or almost 80 of them, 80,000 had died as of January of last year. You'll never read that in the paper, but we have the Veterans Administration documents on that if you want to see them. And they simply point out that they don't say they're dead, they just say they're no longer living. That's a nice way that the government has of covering up their mistakes.
Well, and, you know, it's just been sad to see that most of the time, I call it the coincidence defense, most of the time health authorities and doctors want to say that it's all a coincidence. Whenever something bad happens after vaccination, it's never due to the vaccine. And this is true certainly for the reports that are made to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. You know, tens of thousands of reports. There's actually been almost a quarter of a million vaccine adverse events that have been reported to the government's Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System since 1988. We know that that's only 1 to 10% of actually what's happening out there because there's no sanctions for healthcare providers who don't report when somebody, you know, has a serious health problem or a hospitalization, injury, or death after vaccination, which to me is just, it's just criminal that we are mandating these vaccines, but we don't have any way of making sure that all of those reports actually get to the government when people have a bad outcome after vaccination. So, you know, it's true. It's real. In 1986, the government passed, Congress passed the National Childhood Vaccine Entry Act. That act has given out over $2 billion to people who have been injured by vaccines. The government has acknowledged that vaccines cause injury and death. So it's not a myth. It does happen. What we don't know is how often it happens. And when you institute something like this swine flu vaccine with essentially experimental vaccines, and you don't have any way of keeping an accurate count of what happens to how many people after you give this vaccine, particularly pregnant women and children, it's just not the way you should be doing public policy, I don't think.
Well, I share your concern. Do we have any help, any support at all in Congress pointing out the absurdity of what's going on?
Well, I think that a lot of people are very afraid to speak out, because I know that scientists and physicians who speak out about their concerns about vaccine risks, and I've seen it happen again and again over the last three decades I've been doing this work, they're often ruined professionally. They're ostracized, they're harassed, they're demonized in the media. And so it's hard for people to step out and speak about these things. You know, I'm a mother of a vaccine-injured child. I'm not an MD or a PhD. I don't, my career, my livelihood, I can say what I want to from what I've learned, the research I do and what I learn, because I can't be kicked off a hospital board. I can't be ostracized by my colleagues.
Well, I understand that Dr. Dunbar is going to be at your conference. I talked to her many years ago. She told me she'd been at a major university doing vaccine research for years. And when she had the courage to come out and speak out against the hepatitis B vaccine that was given to newborns, she told me she was threatened. She was threatened, and actually she was harassed to the point where she actually had to leave the country. Is that true?
Her life was made. I mean, she was a renowned vaccine researcher. She had awards from NIH. She had grants. She was a renowned researcher, very highly respected. And I saw it happen. I remember there was a wonderful California pediatric allergist, Kevin Garrity, who's now deceased, who spoke out on DPT vaccine dangers. They ruined him.
And ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand, if you tell the truth today, they're going to come after you. Why they haven't come after me, I don't know. Barbara is sort of immune, as she's the mother of a vaccine-injured child. But doctors, pediatricians, people in organized medicine are afraid to speak out. I know I was in organized medicine for years, and I saw what happened and how they came after people. Or they even tried to bribe me. Unfortunately, I didn't take the bribe.
Yes, and politicians risk it as well. That's why you don't have a lot of politicians who stand up. I remember Dan Burton was very sanctioned by his own party for having spoken out when he was government reform chairman because his grandson had been hurt by, I think he had received 9 vaccines in one day and regressed into autism. And when Dan Burton started to investigate and hold congressional hearings on the issue of vaccine safety, he suffered a lot of repercussions within political circles. And so, you know, it's hard for people when it's been made, it's almost as if you're being unpatriotic or you're, you know, not very intelligent if you question the safety of vaccines. And so that's why you don't see a lot of elected officials or a lot of doctors and scientists standing up publicly and talking about this.
Well, our job is to get the truth out, and that's all we can do. And certainly we have to hope that at least with this upcoming effort to get the people to accept the vaccines, that we can reach enough people that they'll say, we're not going to do it. And, of course, when others hear, they're not going to do it. And people begin talking about the fact that these are not proven safe. These are experimental vaccines. And something that is the things that have happened with other experimental vaccines, the tragedies that have occurred time and again, not just once, but time and time again, I would think that Well, hopefully we're going to be able to get enough people to say we're not going to do it, that they will be afraid to push this. You know, I think the one thing is that when they meet resistance, these people on the other side are not very courageous. That's why they use threats and intimidation, and where they demonize and attack and vilify people, because they really can't debate the issues. And I think if the American people say we're not going to take your vaccines, they'll back down.
I think that the biggest challenge we have in this country right now is we have to protect the right to legal exemptions to vaccine laws, and that means we have to stand up in our states. Vaccine laws are state laws. You have to fight in your state to educate your legislators and make sure that the medical, religious, and conscientious belief exemption holds. 18 states have conscientious belief or philosophical belief exemption. We need that in every state. We need to have a religious exemption that is not constantly being challenged in the states and people being dragged into rooms and grilled about their religious beliefs. This is America. There's no reason why people should be behaving like that way in government.
What about California?
Calling their fellow citizens in and grilling them about what they believe.
What about California? How are our laws here?
You're one of the 18 states that has a medical, a religious, and a philosophical exemption.
Hold that thought. Well, Cindy Barber was just saying that we here in California, we have a medical, religious, and exemption for this, and one of 18 states, but an awful lot of states don't have those exemptions, and people are going to have to stand up and fight for their rights, or we're going to, many people are going, I fear, are going to be seriously injured by this or other vaccines. Barbara, we're out of time. Thank you very much for being with us. Great program. And if I don't talk to you before, why, we're really looking forward to seeing you there on the 2nd of October.
It'll be great to see you in October. I'm so glad you're coming.
Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope you enjoyed our interview with Barbara Lowe Fisher. Now, we have a great DVD with Dr. David Aob, who's going to be at the conference. And if you get the DVD where he talks about mercury, autism, and the global population agenda, that's mercury, autism, and the global population agenda, and ask the question, why are the people who are pushing population control and really want to eliminate a large part of the population, why are they funding vaccination, massive vaccination programs in Africa and other underdeveloped countries? Why are the people who want to kill off a large part of the population pushing vaccination? And, of course, we will actually get a free CD-ROM if you get the DVD with literally 1,000 or more, several thousand pages of documents and scientific papers giving you the background of thimerosal and understanding there are no studies that show it's safe. Well, the only study they have, everybody died, but they assure this, with they didn't die of thimerosal. What madness is that? Ladies and gentlemen, we live in a world gone mad. When you understand that, things begin to make sense. That and the fact there really are wicked and evil people out there who want to hurt other people and children. You need, of course, to see the DVD, Vaccines and Brain Development. That's Vaccines and Brain Development by Dr. Blaylock. And, of course, Dr. David Aob's Mercury, Autism, and the Global Population Agenda. We have a DVD by Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. We carry the book, Vaccines, Are They Safe and Effective? It's a short little book by Neil Miller. We carry another book he wrote called On Autism. It simply gives you the government hearings on autism where they demonstrated the relationship between the autism and the mercury in the vaccines, totally suppressed by the controlled media. That's Autism by Neil Miller. We carry Neil Miller's large book, the Vaccine Information Manual. We recommend it. We have a book by Sherry Tenpenny on vaccines. We want you to have the documentation and to understand. We have a 4-tape set on vaccines. We have a a CD set, Vaccine Update 2009. Now, they're different. All of these are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We've got Dr. Mark Geyer's book. He actually writes the epilogue to this and contributed to the book. It's called Sacred Spark. It's the tragic story of a child who got vaccinated and developed autism, because these children aren't born with autism. They develop it after they've had their vaccinations. And the doctors say, oh, well, just because they were perfectly normal before they had the vaccination, and then they developed it after they had the vaccination, that's just a coincidence, because vaccines are safe and effective. Well, if vaccines are safe, why is it that the Amish children don't get the asthma, that they don't get the autism, they don't get the neurodevelopmental abnormalities that the children who don't take these vaccines get? And, of course, the government knows this. They're lying about it. Simpsonwood report, we actually have a copy of that, top secret report put out by the government and by the CDC. It was a meeting they had on the dangers of thimerosal, and they had it top secret. It was very difficult to get copies. We do have that. We do offer it. It's a very large report if you want to go through it. That's a Simpsonwood report. We have, of course, a report from came out from the State Department National Security Study Memorandum 200. Came out of the over the name of Henry Kissinger, talking about the necessity for population control in the